This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I think I'm done for the week, and I actually have a task to do tomorrow. Tomorrow is my granddaughter's one-year birthday, and I think I'm heading over to my son-in-law and daughter's house, and I'm going to help my son-in-law get all the food prepared for the big party tomorrow night. So this should be fun. It's been a good week. Everything's pottering along. Been able to get some good things accomplished this week. And seem to make some supervisors happy. So yay. It's always good to make the supervisors happy. I'm going to turn up the air conditioning here a little bit because summer is here. It took until June to get it here, but it is here. What else? Finished up the Windows 7 app, got it all through the approval process, did some video demos, gonna put some out there a little bit. They're on YouTube. But, you know, it's taken me 4 months, 4 to 5 months to put that together, that app. And I'm going to have to battle through all the same obscurities that I would have to do with pretty much anything I worked on. And I really am just considering heading back to writing. I think I would like to at least take a look at the iPhone stuff, see how hard it would be to convert the iPhone stuff, convert the app over to iPhone, just to have that under my belt, having done that once, just as an interest, but I think it's really time to get back to writing. Get started on the big projects in writing. So I'm looking forward to that. I've calculated out finances and figured out when, with the current flow of things as they are, I can go ahead and get retired to get to writing full time. But it's not going to be too many more years. So I think I'm just going to quit fooling around in the evenings and just do my consulting stuff during the day and get writing, because I have one project, the Realmers project. There's 24 books in that series, and I've already got a good start on the map, but even if I started on that today and was able to write full-time, I could probably get 2 books done a year, and that means that's a 12-year project. And I ain't getting any younger. So doing it part-time, it turns into like a 24-year project. So, you know, I think it's about time to get started. Anyways, so we'll see. I'm looking forward to that. This last week, I did do a bit of reading. I had been hearing a lot of little pieces from here and there about multiverses and multi-universes and infinities and how everything that can happen is already happening and all those kinds of things. And I find physics fascinating. And so Stephen Hawking had come out with a new book that he wrote in conjunction with the guy, I don't know his name, with the guy who also wrote The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives. And I talked about that on one of the early shows, and so I'm familiar with the guy's work, and I'm familiar with his mindset, and that's fine. So I thought, well, this will be an interesting book, and so I went ahead and downloaded the ebook version of it down to my phone and read through it. And, you know, obviously I have a few little observations here and there, and it was interesting in preparing for this. I went and actually read some reviews of the book, and I gotta say that while there have been some positive reviews of the book, there have been plenty who were nonplussed at the book. And as I read through the reviews, there were several points I went, I agree. So anyways, I expected the book to be directed towards a more generalized audience and expected the book to... Excuse me. It's been a long week. Expected the book to be focused on providing a lot of background for people who really didn't have much background at all in classical physics or quantum mechanics or that kind of thing. And I certainly don't know anything about quantum mechanics aside from what just generalized knowledge things I've read and tried to absorb. So there was a lot of review in the book, but there were some just fascinating things. Before I get into that, we should revisit my premises. It's always good to know where a person is coming from. I believe that nature and its mysteries exist for discovery. I believe that, as the Proverbs say, it is the glory of God to hide a thing, and the glory of kings to seek it out. I believe that in our world, anyone who conducts investigations and tries to learn things can be considered a king and someone who is seeking out the mysteries that God has put here. I believe that God has constructed this world in such a way that nature will give people hints about his existence. I've, for many years, talked about what I believe are / will be the three waves of science. That in the first wave, we have simple external observation, and primitive man looks at animals and takes some clay and molds them, and he says, "There, see, that's about the same thing. I just can't make it move, but I'll figure that out." And that the idea of nature is, while there's a God, God is not far away. God is simply a little better than we are, you know, maybe born with some special powers and that kind of stuff, but, you know, we can get this stuff figured out. As man goes along and discovers how much more complicated the world is than he ever suspected, and gets very enthralled with his ability to actually figure out all this complexity, what is also, I think, happening underneath is that as things become more and more and more complex, the idea of a being who could actually create all of this becomes so overwhelming that man must then shove God aside and say, no, there's no God. No way. But then I think there will come a third wave where there's so many complexities and there's so few explanations for how any of this could possibly survive and stay balanced that the only truly satisfying answer, when you get down to the end of the day, is that there is some kind of organizing principle, that there is some kind of force or being or entity, whatever you want to call it, that in fact makes this all possible. And so, you know, when I read scientists' stuff, I sort of read it within that context. I don't get upset at all when people are haranguing about the fact that there is no God, you know, that this explains everything, that we don't need a creator, that we don't need a watchmaker, because all of this science explains all of this, so God is not necessary. I don't find that argument very convincing at all. A, because we don't really know all there is to know. We only know pieces of what we know. And frankly, if we look back at the history of scientific investigation, we can see that every 10, 20, 30 years ago, there's some big new scientific breakthrough. And sometimes it completely disregards everything that's gone before. We are always learning. We are always discovering new things. And so I think it's a bit pretentious to say, well, see, no God, ta-da, okay. Because what that does is it just exposes an agenda underneath, and it's not really scientifically coherent, because you cannot prove the non-existence of something if you don't have complete knowledge. If you haven't looked under every single rock in the universe, you really can't say whether something does or does not exist. So, but that's okay. I understand people are going to do that anyways. And so my whole philosophy is to look through it and go, oh, look, maybe they're moving a little closer, because look what they're saying here, look what they're saying there. So, you know, as I was reading the grand design, it was pretty obvious to me, as it will be obvious to everyone, that the entire book is a polemic to try to come out and say, with everything we know now, there's no God. We explained it all away. There just no need for a God. Anybody who believes in a God, they don't really get how smart we are, because there's no God. Okay, that's fine. There were some interesting developments, though. It's been several decades now, but back when the Nitpicker's Guides were firing up, it's been almost two decades now. Back when the Nitpicker's Guides were firing up in 1993, I started a website called knitcentral.com, and we talked about everything, and at one point I put up a discussion board called The Kitchen Sink. And inside that, I started a topic called Eating a Jeep. And I explained that it was called Eating a Jeep because while it seemed inconceivable that you could actually eat a Jeep, you can do it provided you get the pieces small enough. And so I said, you know, I'm just going to kind of put through some of my philosophical things. This was in the early days before I found it unnecessary to try to express my views on the universe and all of that sort of thing and try to argue with people and deal in apologetics. I don't really find that necessary to do anymore. You know, if someone wants to argue with me about creation and existence and God and evolution, I just say, you know, I hope that works out for you. Congratulations, your decision, you can believe what you want. That doesn't mean I don't have opinions about things, but you know, if someone wants to argue with me about it, I just say, well, okay, good. Have at it. So in that Eating a Jeep, one of the first things that I was trying to do was get people to realize that there is no such thing as objectivity. Because one of the big arguments that was swirling around at that point was that, well, all you religious people are just subjective. You just interpret your own beliefs. But us objective people out here, we are scientific. We look only at the data and the facts and the observation, and that is what we base everything on. We just observe, and that way we're completely objective, and so what we conclude has to be the truth. And I was trying to get across to people that no, that's not true. You are not objective. You do not examine all evidence without any belief system. And the example, one of the examples that I used is when you walk in and you sit down on a chair, you do not inspect the chair. You do not turn it over to make sure all the screws are correct and in place. You do not run stress fatigue testing to make sure that it's not going to crack in half. You just sit down because you believe the chair will hold you. And I was trying to get across that we have all of these suppositions in our lives and we're dealing with them. Well, I had one person that responded to me, and their response was, well, but you've already said that you're subjective, so you aren't qualified to judge what I do because you're subjective, so there's nothing you can say. I'm objective, so I know I am. Oh, okay, well, that's fine. I hope that works out for you. What was fascinating to me is that Hawkins and his co-author have actually moved to the place where they're willing to admit that the science they are practicing is not objective. That there's really no way to say that a particular model is true and another one is not true. Of course, then they go on to say, but the God model is not true. Okay, that's fine. Okay, so you just... Never mind. And what they use is something called model-based reality. That we all create models in our minds by which we explain reality. And that it's impossible to say whether one model is any better, is any more real than another model. All we can say is whether it's more useful than another model. And they actually had criteria that they say, this is how we determine that a model is a good model. Okay, so notice where these fall in terms of the numbering stream. One, the number one criteria that they say they use to determine if something is a good model is it elegant? Whoa! What happened to, we make observations, we come up with a hypothesis. I'll tell you what happened to that here in a second. Okay, so is it elegant? One. Two, does it contain few arbitrary or adjustable elements? Never mind that some of the stuff they talk about later, they say, well, yeah, these really do contain arbitrary and adjustable elements, but it's elegant. So really what's most important is it elegant? Does it agree with and explain all existing observations? And then number four, does it make detailed predictions about the future? So they say right in the book, obviously, these criteria are subjective. And they go on to talk about the fact that theories take a while to be overthrown, that even when there's stuff that comes up and rubs against it in terms of observation, people just make patches on the existing stuff. They talk about all this stuff. They talk about all this stuff. Which is really amusing to say that they recognize that there is just continuing adaptation of theories and models, and we're in the churn of it, which we always are. That's science. We're in the churn of it. But then by the same breath, they came out and say, see, you don't need a God. Okay, well... So you don't believe that we will ever come up with a model that says, hey, there's a God in it. You know, third wave of science, it's coming. Well, and then there's some other really interesting things about the book where they're explaining this thing called renormalization. Part of the way that they get to the whole multiverse thing is that they have this experiment called the double slit experiment that to them doesn't make any sense unless they come up with this model of multiplicity. And I'm already home. You know, but maybe we should do like a part one and part two on this because there's some other stuff to talk about here, and I have just reached my driveway. So maybe we'll just wrap up here. So one of the first things that I thought was really fascinating and a step in the right direction was the fact that when it came to the quote-unquote scientific theories that are being purported in this book, that Hawking and his co-author came right out and said that the models that we're working with to explain the universe are subjective. And that you can't really say one model is better than another. And I thought, hey, now, that's actually a step in the right direction. I'm getting my mail. In fact, what's interesting is that one of the potential theories that explains our universe is called holographic something or other. I'll get it when I get in the garage. Well, just like, oh, here it is. Realism, this is a quote out of the book. Realism may be a tempting viewpoint. So people who say, well, this is reality. What I see, what I observe, that's reality. That's it. It's real. Ta-da. Because, of course, the big philosophical thing for many, many years is, how do I know that I actually exist? How do I know that this car I'm driving is actually here? Am I just imagining it? Is someone else just imagining it in their mind? And so they were responding to that as hardcore physicists who have been investigating the nature of the world. I'm backing into my garage. And their response in light of quantum mechanics and in light of all their formulas, their response is really a very intriguing one. And their response is that there is not a picture or theory independent, a picture or theory independent concept of reality. Model-based reality. We have a model, and if that seems good, this isn't a quote. Quote is, realism may be a tempting viewpoint. What we know about modern physics makes it a difficult one to defend. And then we skip down a little bit. The holographic principle, they say there's this thing out called the holographic principle in which our four-dimensional world may be just shadows on the boundary of a larger five-dimensional space-time. Different theories can successfully describe the same phenomena through disparate conceptual frameworks. In other words, with those statements, they have said that we really can't tell for sure what's real and if our existence really is the sum total of reality. That in fact, our existence may be just an add-on to a much larger existence. And I say, that sounds familiar to me. Now, sure, they're still at the point where they're over there saying, no God, but that doesn't mean there's a God. There's no God. Okay. But it's certainly a lot farther down the path to a supernatural realm than we have ever been before with hardline physicists. And I think that's a very interesting thing. So we'll stop here. That's part one. Maybe we'll do some part two-ing next week about it, because there are some other interesting conclusions with all of this that I've chatted with friends about this week. Hope you all have a good weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.